Welcome, everybody, to the next installment of the Northampton Community Music Center podcast series. And this morning, it's my pleasure to be talking with Bill Feinstein, who many, many years ago was the founder of the Northampton Community Music Center. So today we're going to talk about the early days of what happened. And do I remember correctly that it all started with Proposition 2.5?
Yes, that was the impetus. The arts were cut out of the schools because there was such a cutback in budgets. So, the budgets in the school were cut back so severely that one of the first things to go were the arts. We had been fortunate at that time in that I made an investment that had quite a windfall. So I said, okay, let's put the money from this investment, or at least part of it, into something that will return some arts to children. And that got us started.
But you had a personal, and this was kind of personal because of your children, right?
Yes. I was doing Suzuki piano with my daughter, and it was such a wonderful experience. And I thought it just wasn't fair that other children weren't being given this opportunity. And it was just such a great way to connect with her and share with her my love of music. And so I connected with her teacher and started a Suzuki program. We had a whopping 20 students. We did the lessons and the mini recitals in my living room at the time.
The teacher was Anne Marie Novak, is that right?
Correct.
Did she just kind of move all of her students into this, into your living room?
Yeah, she didn't have that many students. There were also other Suzuki teachers who joined in this. There was Frigga Scott, I think, was another person. What was her name? Arnold.
Well, I remember Joseph Arnold was one of the early board members.
Right.
It must have been his wife.
His wife was a Suzuki piano teacher, I think.
Uh-huh.
I have a kind of a cute story about these Suzuki recitals. I don't know if you remember, but at the same time, we were doing hospice care for my mother in our house. And it was pretty busy. We had a bunch of little children, and I was still running my practice and taking care of my mom. And we finally went out for a little cross-country ski. I had forgotten that there was going to be a Suzuki recital in our living room that afternoon. And the kids all showed up, and it was just my mom and a nurse there. And then the parents started coming in. And when we got home, she said, oh, you should have heard this. It was such a great concert. And these kids were playing Little Twinkles and stuff. It was one of those funny moments in life.
So your mother enjoyed the show?
She did.
Okay, that's good. And the nurse wasn't too freaked out.
I think they weren't terrified by 5 and 7 year olds.
No, I guess not. Okay. So no cell phones back then to check on what was going on. So what year was that? Was that 85 or something?
Yeah, around there, 85, exactly, 86, somewhere in there. Yeah, 85 probably.
So now, was it all piano students at the start?
Yes, it was only piano and only children and their parents in the Suzuki model. The original purposes that I laid out in the bylaws and in actually a proposal when I was trying to raise money, I found the original and I can read it to you. To provide music activities and public performances that will enrich the life of our community, to specifically reach out to children under the age of 12. That was based on my belief that there was a period called a critical period where you had to learn music or you would not ever develop your musical intelligence. As a psychologist, I had learned about critical periods in development. And music had a very specific time where if you didn't learn before the age of 9, you had a much, much harder time to learn how to play music. To engage child and adult together in the pursuit of music, to foster constructive social interaction and personal growth through participation in the performing arts and the development of skills in a supportive setting. To make these activities available to all through scholarships based on financial need. So those were the lofty goals in the beginning, Joe, remember?
So it all sounds familiar. it's not that different from the current mission statement that the Music Center has. Now, I remember when I first heard about what you were doing, you know, I was running my music store, Downtown Sounds in Northampton, and there was an article in the Daily Hampshire Gazette about something called a music mobile. You want to talk about that for a minute or two?
Oh, boy, that was one of my kooky, aging hippie ideas that really had me all excited. I thought we would not have a center for the music learning, but have a wagon or something that went around town and created musical events in neighborhoods. Pam Hunter, one of the original board people, and I thought this was a great idea, and we kept looking into it and thinking about getting permits and stuff. It didn't have a lot of traction, every pun intended there.
Okay. So when did you start going beyond piano students?
That's a good question. Do you remember? Because you were in that stage.
I really don't remember at all. And I remember there were, at some point, the music lessons were not limited to your living room on Lyman Street. There were other locations.
Right. John Harlow was so generous and gave us a space in his office building. And we were actually in a number of places. I convinced Mayor Musanti to let us have a room in one of the schools. He was terrific. We went to a school board meeting and they said, why should we let a private organization use the school building? And the mayor said, what's the matter with you people? This guy's putting up his own money and time and they want to provide lessons for our children. Why shouldn't? And they backed down and we had a classroom after school.
Was that at Jackson Street?
Yeah, I think it was. Uh-huh. And then wasn't there one more place?
I'm sure there was. Well, did some of the lessons take place at Joe Arnold's chiropractic office or not?
I don't think so.
Vicki Arnold, that's his wife's name.
Vicki, that was her name, yeah.
As I get older, names tend to come back to me at, you know, like 3 or 4 minutes after the initial conversation. Did any of the lessons happen in your office in those days, or was that later on?
It was a little later on. There was an office suite across the hall that was the first place we actually rented. And so there were lessons and administrative offices there. And then they would use my office sometimes when I wasn't around. And that went on for a few years. But that was the very first rent-paying place.
Okay. Now, Anne Marie was still the director then?
Yeah, she must have been for a little while there. Part of the problem is that I left for a year. I left the country for a year. And when I came back, things were in rough shape. I made the very hard choice. It was very, very painful to ask Anne-Marie to step down because this was something that she had started from her heart as well. But she wasn't doing a good job administering it. And I just felt awful. And that's when I found Deb Scher, who had worked in a number of community music schools, was a musician herself, and had moved to Northampton and hired her, and she made a huge difference. She brought the music center up to a level of probably 250 students where it had been at about, I guess, 70 or so.
Uh-huh. Well, I certainly remember that. I remember I had an interview with Deb at Curtis and Schwartz, and we had a wonderful lunch there. And so by the time Deb came along, there, I assume all the instruments were being taught as well, you know, cello and violin and flute, as well as piano by then.
Yeah, I think it might have been actually Deb who started some of that. Was her name Lynn Lorimer?
Or? Lynn Lovell, a bass player?
No, a flutist, Suzuki flute teacher.
Kim Lorimer.
Kim Lorimer, yeah. I think she was the first flute teacher, and she started quite a large flute studio at the music center. And then she left and she took all the students with her, which I didn't think was exactly kosher. But
yeah. So from the beginning, when the Northampton Community Music Center was created, you deliberately called it Music Center and not Music School. Do you want to talk about that as to what your vision was there?
Yes. So it goes back to the idea put forth in the purposes, which was that it was going to be a place not only for music study, but for performance and celebration of music, and also closer to the idea of the music go round, I think is what we called it, it would be a place where music could have a center, and maybe the music around would park there and go out to neighborhoods. But I didn't want it to just be a school, you know, to have it have more of a creative arts presence. So that was behind the name.
Uh-huh. If I remember correctly, we were giving scholarships right from the start. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. I don't think there's been a year in the history of where students weren't receiving some kind of assistance if they needed it.
Okay. So I know that a lot of our attention, you know, once Deb came on board, was to find a real location for the music center. I know there were a lot of different things that happened. I think fairly soon after she came on was when we moved into the old Naugatuck Bank building where Goberry is now.
Yes. I just came across, as I mentioned to you the other day, I came across a newspaper article with photographs of pianos being wheeled down Main Street from 160 Main to, 90 Main? So, yeah. They called it the piano parade. Huh. So it was a big move, you know, down about a quarter of a mile or less. And that was very exciting to have so much space for us. We had both the upper level and the basement. There was that massive safe that you and I talked about.
Yes, I remember that. I was, as soon as I saw it, I was terrified that some little kids were going to be playing around and manage to close the door of the thing and be trapped in there. But I don't think the door could be moved. So I needn't have been so worried about it.
I think you're right. It's pretty massive. And as I mentioned the other day, ironically, is now the office for Goberry that's owned by my son, who was also on the board of the music center until recently. So there's a nice set of circles there.
So, but even while we were there, you were still looking around for somewhere that could really be permanently ours.
Yeah, well, we knew it was growing. And there were two places I had my eye on for years. One was the South Street School, where we are now, because I lived off of South Street and I'd pass it and it was just this empty falling apart building that was used for Halloween only. And I went to the mayor at that time. I think she was Claire Higgins. And I said, how about you work out something for us? And the city was not ready at that point to let go of it. And the other place was the Baptist Church on the corner of Elm and Main and that whole crazy corner there. And I totally fell in love with that space. And the board of the church was very kind and offered us the building for only $100,000, which was like a quarter of what it was on the market for. Needed a lot of work. But I was ready to buy it for the music center. It would have been my last big hurrah, money-wise, and start renovations. But the board had more caution, and I think felt that renovations might have bankrupted us. So we unfortunately had to let that building go. And then it was a few years later that the city was ready to finally part with the South Street School. And it was partly because there were raccoons living in it and the roof had collapsed and it was just useless.
Yeah. And so I think those were the days of Mary Ford. It was before Claire Higgins was mayor, I think.
I think you're right. You're right. And so we got the building for $1 a year, which was pretty cheap, except it cost nearly $500,000 to make it usable. So we went around looking for financing, and nobody was going to loan us a lot of money because we were sort of an unknown entity in that way. We were still really small fry. So I offered up my house as collateral. They gave us a mortgage based on my house. And then people like you and a lot of others stepped up and made very generous contributions. And so I remember we hired a consultant from Boston to help us think about how to raise money. And they said, forget it. You'll never raise enough money to do this project. You're too small. The town's too small. Give it up. And guess what, Joe?
They were wrong.
The town rallied beautifully.
Yes, it did.
It was just amazing how many people stepped up. Nancy Reeves raised money from people who we'd never even heard of, who just thought it was a great idea. And One guy saw an article in the newspaper about what we were doing, and he gave us $10,000.
Well, I think this is where we have to bring in Jonathan Wright, who we couldn't have done this project without him, I don't think.
Right. So once we were sure we could raise some money, we looked around at architects and builders, and we landed on Tris Metcalf, who had a really creative design for inside. He said he wanted to make it like jazz. And there was no doubt that Jonathan Wright and his company was the place to go for the construction. But it wasn't just construction. Jonathan threw himself into this full-heartedly. We had meetings every week for 2 hours talking about design. And
right. And listening to bad puns, if I remember correctly.
They weren't bad.
They weren't that bad, I guess.
Jonathan and I we both liked that kind of humor. Nobody else seemed to think it was funny, but we had a good time. And he not only oversaw all the building, but he was able to connect us to the business community in a way we had never been able to before. Pat Goggins stepped up because of Jonathan, and several others made significant contributions and got us over the hump. It was an exciting time, wasn't it, Joe?
Yes, it was. So we had one of the biggest issues we faced was the access. And I have to say, Tris Metcalf came up with very creative solution for how we could have our entrance on one level between the basement and the first floor, and then have a lift on one side of the building and another lift on the other side of the building to get people to the second floor. It was that took a lot of effort to navigate also.
Yeah, Tris and I drove to Boston and met with the ADA board and convinced them that this was a viable option. It was great because if we had to put an elevator in, it would have cost, I think, a third of the renovation budget.
And there was nowhere to put it that wouldn't have destroyed the character of the building.
Exactly, yeah. So that was really quite a tour de force.
Deb was not still the director when we moved in there, was she?
Not when we moved in. No.
She was stolen away from us by Williston School.
Yeah, she had to do that. Her kids were coming of age for that school, and that was a way to get them educated there. So she worked there while they went to Williston and then moved on. But she was part of the board for sure. And in all those meetings that we had on Friday mornings talking about design. But the director then was Lucia Miller. She took it on as more than a job also. It's funny how so many people approach this project right from the start with so much heart and love and commitment. It's just remarkable to me that it touched so many people so deeply, you know?
You're right about that. I think we found the director we have now, Jason Trotta. We can say the same about him. He's, you know, it's certainly much more than a job for him. He's really put his whole person into it. And
totally, yeah.
Great love and affection. So it's been a while since you've been personally involved in closely. Must have been a little strange for you backing away from it.
Well, it's sort of like being a parent. You know, I always called the music center my fifth child. After, I guess, my being on the board and involved for about 16 years or so, it just felt like, you know, I got to get out of the way, got to sort of take my ego and roll it down the street a little bit and make room for people to take on the responsibility more. And the only one who didn't do that was a guy named Joe Blumenthal.
Well, no, I'm not the only one. Jonathan's right. Meg Kelsey Wright has been involved just as long as I have.
But she was off for a while, Joe.
I was too. Well, I have to say, you know, in leaving Downtown Sounds, I had a very much similar kind of thing. I had to back away and let other people take responsibility. So I certainly know what you're talking about there. But
yeah.
You should really be looking at the whole thing with a great deal of pride. I think your original mission that you had hoped to accomplish has really come to fruition in the Community Music Center, and the whole town owes you a real debt of gratitude for that.
Well, thank you. I always think of it though as more like an orchestra created it rather than taking that kind of personal credit. I certainly put my heart and soul into it, did so many things that were exciting for me, but also exhausting. I can't imagine how many nights I stayed up until 1 or 2 in the morning taking care of things for the center that just provided energy to keep going on it.
Uh-huh.
People like you who never let go of the mission, and Pam Hunter and others who just made this thing happen, and the Wrights for sure, the Kelsey Wrights.
Yeah, it takes a village, as somebody famous once said.
It certainly does. It certainly does. And I never in my wildest dreams thought it would be as successful as it is with what, there were 1,600 students or something?
Probably, it was close to that before the pandemic. It's it's really a real institution in the community now. Well, I think we're just about out of time, but I want to thank you for talking with us. It's been really fun to relive those early days a little bit, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. You know, once you get somebody started talking about his children and his grandchildren, he'll never stop. So.
Okay.
Here we are. Thanks, yep. Joe.
And okay, thank you.
Thank you for your role in all of this. Bye-bye.